Your patience and flexibility in moving my presentation. I had a dropout of internet, not very good when you rely so much on the internet. But everything seems to be okay, and I hope you're able to see my slides.
Yeah, I'm able to see your lights. Thank you.
Good. Okay, I'll just change to the first one. Hopefully that works. Does it? There it is. Good. Okay. So in my talk, I'm going to talk about long-term care for older people because that's really my specialty. And I am going to present you, first of all, some common drivers for why we need reforms in long-term care, or what has been sort of the argument for why we need reforms in long-term care. And then I'm going to present eight different reform tendencies in long-term care in Europe, but also with some global perspectives. And finally, I'm going to share some ideas of mine in terms of what are the implications for the way that we conceptualize and also perceive risk and also the need for care and support in later life. And I hope you will join me for a discussion of this. So, first of all, if we're looking at the, what is sort of driving different countries for making reforms in long-term care, there are the old and very familiar challenges of family forms are changing. So we heard interestingly from Shireen that this there's new ways of being together across generations, and I thought that was a wonderful contribution. But family forms are changing in the sense that we have different relationships and different ways of helping each other. Labour market participation has also changed, of course. In some countries, women's entry to the labour market is going back to the 60s, but participation has been changing also. We've also seen some developments in migration, both within cross and within border migration, and also urbanization, so that people are moving more and more to the cities. On the other side, in terms of you can say the need side, there was for a long time the very positive, or you could say the expectations that we would see as we grow older and have more years of living, we would also see this tendency of compression of mobility, so that we would sort of like have fewer years where we need care and support. There is some tendency across the countries, but it's not certainly not a global trend, and it seems to be slowing down. It's also been criticized for being a generalized perspective, so that it doesn't take into account that within the populations there are quite large differences. So this is showing you in terms of life expectancy in recent years has increased, but healthy life expectancy has not. So we can see that the life expectancy has increased in Europe since 2002 from 74 years to 77.8 years. And this is a consistent increase. But in most countries, these increases have not been accompanied by a compression of disability. So we do expect to see, you can say, more need in terms of frailty. So in terms of the drivers for reform, there's also another driver for reform, which has to do with the way we produce services. We can see within a lot of industries, we have been able to become more efficient in the sense that we we're doing things smarter ways. We have of course digital services at hand and so on. But these developments have not necessarily affected the way that we produce long-term care. It's a very labor-intensive sector, so we do see some prospects in the terms of robots and so on, but in most cases it's also very costly to invest in and implement. So there is the worry, you can say, that we cannot increase production. We have this Baumol effect that it requires people in order to provide care. And then, of course, this leads also to a concern of a rising cost due to aging societies. Just showing you this figure of long-term care expenditure from 2014 across a number of European countries. And of course, you can see there is quite variation in how much countries are spending on long-term care. This includes both health and the social component. But also to take into account is that many countries are expecting a doubling of long-term care expenditure in the years to come. So there is an increasing, you can say, interest in how do we keep costs down. So how do the reform tendency in long-term care reflect these drivers for change? I wanted to start going back a bit in history, because I think one of the bigger changes has been this perception of aging that has changed into seeing more trying to consider aging as also a time of life which doesn't need to be about illness, frailty, and so on. And this is where the active aging perspective comes in, which has since the 1960s offered new perspectives of aging, new discourses of aging. So instead of seeing aging as being a period of time where you're isolated, where you're dependent, where you lose your role in society, labor market participation role, family role, and so on, and a time of life where you're passive, we have rather moved to a portrayal of later life where we see there are opportunities, you can still be productive, you can fulfill your life with new interests, activities, and so on. And you can say overall, it's provided a very positive perspective on aging, which doesn't have to be this, as I said, related to decay, illness, and dependency. So the pictures are just illustrating, I think, two very different perspectives of aging. Blakey in 1999, I think, formulated it very well, that we see that this is also a discourse about transition to a new life rather than continuation of the old. So the expectation that this is a part of your life where you can actually start doing something different. So the picture of later life, as he says, has shifted from sickness and decline to health, liberation, and even refurbishment. If we look at policies of active aging, there are a number of policies, for instance, across different countries, we have increased our working lives in the sense that pension ages are being postponed. Personally, I'm expected to work until I'm, 72? I just counted the other day. So this is a way of trying to keep people active, but also, of course, contributing in terms of taxes and so on. But this participation, of course, goes in other ways, also in terms of being active in the communities, in voluntary services and so on. But there's a third point also in the policy line, which is the expectation that as an individual, you should also try to lead a life where you remain independent. And this actually then is supposed to give you also some kind of dignity in old age. So there are some expectations and some connotations about what is the good old life also. So a number of policy actions have been suggested by the EU: activation, engagement, maintaining and upkeeping social relations, physical exercise, and also, and this goes also in the direction of the member states, installing policies of prevention and repairing. So we can talk about that we have new risks, but also new responsibilities in old age. So I would argue that we have seen a shift away from what you can say is more like a passive, a biomedical model of the body and frailty, to a perception of active and intervening. So that both old age is about active living, but it's also it's a question about intervening that also here, of course, leaves a role for policy and for different interventions. It is, however, also, I think, a model which individualizes to some extent the risks, and it has these moral implications. There is the duty on the individual to act in a sensible way and lead a sensible life, eat well, exercise, and so on. And therefore also a matter of bearing the consequences if you do not lead this this responsible life. So here comes in the perspective of responsabilization. So Mulert and Bix have this quote about the creation of the sensible and self-responsible citizenry, where you are insisting on productive lives as we age, and also the conduct of the self. The individuals are encouraged to internalize wider social risks. Another tendency is seeing long-term care as a new social risk. And here we're not only thinking about demographic changes and how that drives reforms, but also seeing aging as a new social risk and therefore a common risk. You can say it may hit us all. So it's in that sense, it's collectivized, and which also gives a political legitimation for why we need to provide different interventions. And overall, there is in the reforms an interest in cost effectiveness. So how do we keep costs down? But I think it's interesting also that we do see an interest in quality of life and also quality of care. So it's also a matter of not only providing a lot, but also providing the right care and with the purpose of increasing quality of life. So what is quite interesting in terms of long-term care is that in comparison to many other social policy areas, such as family policy, for instance, we do see an increasing political will and also a determination for investing and developing long-term care. And especially, of course, as we are standing in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. So long-term care has become kind of this epicenter of COVID-19, and therefore also giving us reason for thinking about what is need, what is valid care, what is prioritized, and how do we justify this, as Mary Daly has just written in a recent article. So what is interesting, as I said, is that there is this common recognition of long-term care as something we need to invest in. And I think we do see to various degrees, but this is a global approach. We have within Europe and high-income countries, we do see an expansion of social rights. And quite often it's with reference to principles of universalism. So covering all citizens in the society, talking about equality and so on. So we see these tendencies in Austria, France, and Spain. And for instance, the EU pillar of social rights is also supporting this trend. But we do also see in low and middle income countries that for the first time, national policies of long-term care are being developed. And often they also include health and care systems and pensions. So it's an overall and more holistic approach to long-term care needs. But it's not, in fact, a long-term care policy. It's more seen within the healthcare systems. And we also know that it's far from all countries that have extensive provision. This figure shows you deficits in long-term care coverage in terms of how many of the population in the various countries which are covered. It's of course an estimation, but there are differences, and this is highlighted with the different colors in the figure. Part of this new interest in long-term care as a policy is also, I think, an overall interest in social investment. And here, of course, the EU Commission came out in 2013 with a Commission report on how can we introduce social investment for children, people living in homelessness, in terms of health, active inclusion, and also very interestingly, I think, in terms of long-term care. And the ideas behind social investment is I think interesting also because it provides a new societal diagnosis that as we're living in global and knowledge-based societies, we need to consider needs differently, and we need to invest very early on. So in my view, the social investment perspective takes a new approach, seeing social policy as a productive factor. Sorry about the spelling mistake there. So that it's better to prepare than prepare, you can say. And it's also a lot of focus on the individual and thinking about that this focus might lead to higher productivity and economic growth. And of course, the most obvious social investment focus is on children, that we go in early on and invest in children in terms of education. We provide good quality daycare and so on. But quite interestingly, also within the social investment package, as I said, was also considered long-term care. And here there was a lot of focus on, in fact, reablement, and I'll just take that up as a fifth tendency. I think reablement, which goes, by the way, under a lot of different names, but it's a new approach where you consider, you can say, traditional conventional approaches to home care as being more passive, and then instead trying to provide active care. And this is a way to invest in the individual, to go in and try to make sure that they again are able to function in their daily capacities. So a number of countries have introduced this policy in their home care, and this includes Denmark, where it's obligatory, but it's also widespread in England, Norway, and New Zealand, Scotland, Netherlands, Australia, and in the US. And basically, it's a short-term intervention with the focus of trying to for the older person to assist them in regaining or maintaining daily functional capacities. So it could be, for instance, about assisting the older person in being able to dress themselves or using the stairs and so on. It's also a multidisciplinary approach and very goal-oriented. So specific goals are intended to be achieved. So you can say it's very project-related in the sense that there's something to be achieved and setting up goals, you can say, both for the older person and also for staff. And it has some perspectives. It's not, the evidence is still lacking, but for instance, in Denmark, we've seen success rates of 60% in regards to regaining functional capacities. And if you want to know more about this approach, I would recommend you to visit this project website, ReAble, which is hosted by Auckland University. Even though I've said that there is the tendency of an interest in expanding long-term care and also considering the rights of the citizen, I also see some worries in the sense of adjusting rights as well as quality and content of care. So you can say, alongside the spread of more universalism in long-term care, there is also a recalibration in a sense of changing what is then provided, how much is provided, how often is it provided. So I think increasingly we are moving away from service universalism, where you can say that services are accessible, affordable, and attractive in terms of being high quality services, and then more towards a recalibration of understanding what is need and also reassessing need. This is, for instance, one of the consequences of reablement. If you change people's capacities, then of course they shouldn't continuously be provided with the same provisions of care, but they need a reassessment of their need. But there is then this understanding that going in and reassessing need. And there's also an understanding of, or not an understanding, but I think a policy tendency of targeting to more narrowly defined user groups, and in particular those with the highest needs, or even redesigning service levels. So one example from Denmark is a municipality in Denmark said, we will no longer provide cleaning services to older people unless they are, and this is a quote, blind, paralyzed, or suffer from severe dementia. This was quite, it created an outcry in Denmark, also because we do have quite high levels of services. But this was a way of trying to redefine what is actually the user groups that we are providing services for. One question is if these tendencies are leading to care poverty, and we actually have two sessions at the conference focusing on care poverty. So if you're interested in this, I would recommend you to go and attend these sessions. Then I see also a tendency in, you can say, overall, in a larger perspective, how we are considering the way that we govern the production of long-term care services. And one of the tendencies is, I think, we are moving away from new public management principles to new public governance principles. One of the effects of new public management being introduced in long-term care, and this has perhaps affected in particular the Nordic countries, but also in the UK, have for instance been, we've seen an increase in the for-profit providers providing services. And this is a figure showing you just across the Nordic countries, Norway, Denmark, Sweden, and Finland, in terms of the first line is home care services, or the first pillar, sorry, and the next one is nursing homes. So this is just showing you the proportion of long-term care by provided by private providers, which has really changed, you can say, the image of long-term care in the Nordic countries. But as I said, also affected the liberal countries more. So overall, we can say that new public management has given more focus on efficiency, tailorization, and here illustrated by the picture by Charlie Chaplin at the assembly line, and also a much more focus on being able to document what is provided, but also rationing. And then this goes again to the care poverty argument, trying to ration to those who have the highest needs. And therefore, we can see that the profile of services have changed. In particular, I think, in the way that we're considering social care, relational care. So care has in some senses become more instrumental, providing for the bodily needs, but perhaps not a more holistic approach in thinking also about social needs. We've been talking about, in the UK, for instance, about flying care visits. So in and out as quickly as possible, but without considering the person and how they're doing this day. In Denmark, we had a discussion about barcode care. So this outside the homes of the older person was installed this barcode, so that in terms of documentation, the care worker could then with this device document that he or she had been there that day and for so many minutes. So it became, very instrumentalized. And I think also less attractive for both users and care workers and meaningful also in the sense of providing care. So we've had a lot of unintended and negative consequences of new public management. So mistrust between in terms of professionals and the way that they deliver services, that sectors became silos, not working together. So greater institutional fragmentation. Also, increase in rules and care workers feeling that they were burdened so much by bureaucracy, counting regime, so they have to document how often, how long, and so on. And the criticism has been that the care workers have lost agency and motivation, and also that citizens have been reduced to, you can say, being demanding customers. So instead, I think interesting tendencies is to consider new steering principles of new public governance. So trying instead cooperate, negotiate and support active participation from both users, but also employees. And there is not, it's sort of not meaning that we no longer have control over what is being delivered, for instance, but it's more trying to focus on co-production, trust and innovation. One example of trust from Denmark is this stamp card, if you can call it, where users of home help are giving 10 hours of care that they can do with what they feel like. So they can sort of put together maybe 3 hours and then ask care staff, could you assist me to going to the cinema or wherever I feel like going on an excursion or whatever, but trusting the older person in knowing what is best for them. And also within this, I think, new public governance perspective is the perspective of doing for and then replacing that with doing with the user. So considering collaboration with the user in finding out what is best for you and how would you like your care to be provided today. And this is, of course, also within the perspective of reablement. Then the final tendency, I would say, is something that I'm a bit worried about, which is about deprofessionalization. And this is kind of like also the tendency I said before in terms of trusting the user of in being the expert of what is needed. Then there's the other side of the coin in how does that, where does that leave the professional in terms of being the one that defines the need and what is to be provided today. And I think we've seen tendencies, and this has been in policies of choice, for instance, as installing the user as the expert. And with free choice, We've had some tendencies of consumerism that you should just replace one provider of care with another. So there are these tendencies that care is replaceable and also that it doesn't have any cost for the user to just replace one provider with another, which of course is can be problematized because it's not like shopping for milk in the supermarket. There is a very you can say relational care in terms of you gain a relationship with the care worker and so on. So it's not easy also to identify what is good quality of care and which provider is the best. We also see some tendencies in terms of deregulation of care work in order to make it more flexible and cheaper, for instance, in the Netherlands. So this goes against tendencies of professionalization of care. But we're also seeing then again, more positively, that there is, and maybe because of the increasing use of care migrants, then some focus also from the EU Commission, for instance, in defining what are professional standards, what is good care, and what kind of education do care employees need to have. So there is this tendency, and I would say also a perspective of thinking about quality of life and quality of care from the perspective of the user. So you can say that there is a dilemma of maybe thinking about from the perspective of the user, but also thinking about it from the perspective of the care professional. So finalizing, and this is also up for discussion. I'm looking forward to see comments. But here are early thoughts of mine on the implication for how we conceptualize and perceive risk and need for support in later life. So I think as a conclusion, we increasingly are seeing frailty in old age as a social risk. And we've seen this active aging as installing new perspective of what is good aging and how we should age. So there is this expectation of refurbishment, but I would argue also responsibilization, so that the individual becomes responsible for leading the right and proper life. We also, and particularly with reablement, getting this perspective of plasticity, plasticity, that something can be replaced, it can become better. And which is, of course, I think a very positive perspective that we are not considered to never be able to change or recover and so on. So with reablement, we get a new perspective of regaining and maintaining capacities. And this is increasingly become part of different countries' long-term care interventions. But overall, we are seeing that countries are in investing in long-term care and sometimes with this social investment perspective also. There is some tendencies in terms of universal long-term care social rights, but still some way, certainly. And as I said, there was also worries about how rights are adjusted and how the service levels are adjusted. I'm quite positive in regards to that we are seeing some tendencies of this new public governance, replacement of you can say merely control to also thinking about empowerment and trust. And then I think we are in a dilemma of where we put the balance in terms of are we having a quality of care, quality of life perspective, but we're also seeing consumerism might challenge professionalism. So a question mark, I think, more than a conclusion, is that we need to find sustainable solution in aging worlds with rising need and cost, and whether these reforms are tendencies that will lead us in the right direction. And I think more, I'm also seeing that the COVID-19 situation However grave it is, it also has put a lot of focus on long-term care and giving it a new relevance. So I think that is an interesting development in itself. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.